Welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Dwight Herron, the chair of the Government Relations and Economics Committee of ACRO. And we have our latest podcast for you discussing our legislative focus for the 118th Congress. I want to let you know that your GREC is continually working and advocating on your behalf for your ability to care for your patients. And not surprisingly, there are a series of major topics that really contribute to our efforts this year in achieving those goals. And they're really divided into three major categories. The first is the legislative, second is regulatory, and the third is payer engagement. And we'll sort of walk through with you over the next few minutes specifically about some of these items. If we start with the legislative section, we'll talk to you about the 4% sequestration. A number of you have heard us talk about this. We've talked about this prior in our prior podcast, but the conversion factor and clinical labor cuts. And the second area of real focus for us this year is on the regulatory front. And we've heard you. We recognize some of the challenges that are out there. We are focused on the 2023 hospital outpatient PPS, specifically looking at the APM. As many of you know, that's sort of been put on hold, but we have to be ready for this. And Jason McKildrick, who's our staffer on the GREC committee, will talk to you in greater detail about this. And of course, we've been living under a modified direct supervision recommendation from CMS, and we'll give you an update on what our plans relative to focusing on this area. We'll also talk about the 2023 physician fee schedule and the indirect practice expense, which I think is really important, vitally important to us in ensuring the future viability of our practices, regardless of site of service. And last but not least is our activities around payer engagement. And Dr. Chris Yaris will talk to you about our engagement with AIM and EviCore. So with that, I'll turn over the podcast to Jason to talk to you about the legislative regulatory effects and go from there. So Jason.
Thanks, Dr. Herron. Starting with the recap from the end of the year bill, last year, the omnibus bill, there were a number of provisions in the end of the year bill that had a lot of folks very concerned. There was a, you know, kind of a cumulative, you know, 8 to 9% cut, depending on, you know, which items you're looking at. There was the PAYGO, there was the conversion factor, and there was these ongoing clinical labor cuts and cuts to the office-based folks. And what we saw play out in the end of the year package was that 4% PAYGO was kicked until effectively until next Congress. So kicked out until 2025. You know, that feels to me like they're thinking that gives them some breathing room on broader reform. We will see. Kicked to a potentially a new administration as well. You've got the conversion factor, which was 4.5%, that conversion factor cut. Ultimately, what was mitigated in that omnibus bill was really only about half of that. And for this year, for 2023, and only about a quarter of that for 2024, and then no relief as of 2025. And so that, you know, also was something that just kind of feels like, you know, from Congress's vantage point, you know, we're kind of, we don't want to deal with this conversion factor anymore. We didn't want to create an SGR 2.0. You know, we're trying to just give you some relief to just kind of glide path out of this. But You know, I can tell you, you know, a lot of the providers don't see it this way. And in fact, when you look at the overall reduction in the conversion factor through 2025, when you compare it to 2020, the overall reduction in the conversion factor is going to end up being an 11% cut. So, you know, that's pretty significant.
So Jason, let me interrupt you here because I recognize that some folks on this podcast may not be as in tuned to things, legislative pieces on the Hill, but what exactly is the conversion factor? And you also mentioned something, the SGR. So do you want to just briefly mention to the audience what those two things are and why they're important?
Always appreciate that check on acronyms that are, you know, probably overly used and not always understood. The sustainable growth rate, the SGR, was a problem that affected the physician fee schedule several years back, where Congress effectively was doing a kick the can kind of thing, which they like to do, where they would kind of fix it for next year, but make the cut even bigger in the out year. And you know, they've kind of set themselves up. Congress did similarly with some of the ongoing cuts to the conversion factor, starting in 2021 with a big 10% cut to the conversion factor due to the E&M cuts. And so they were kind of, you know, kicking that can. And when you asked what a conversion factor is, the payment under physician fee schedule is the conversion factor times the RVU is the payment. So every time the conversion factor goes down, your payment's going down. So all of this to say that, you know, somebody out there might be wondering, well, how can they be cutting the, you know, conversion factor by 11%? And what does that mean for the physician fee schedule? Where's that money going? You know, it's been going by and large to primary care. There's been a massive redistribution, one of the biggest redistributions ever within the physician fee schedule, away from specialists like radiation oncology into primary care. And in fact, there's another code that's coming online, a G2211 code for primary care for 2024, that's going to cause another 3% cut to the conversion factor. So it's going to be a really brutal year this year again. Those are all big house of medicine, AMA, all provider issues. One of the things that ACRO is focused on and working with the so-called Clinical Labor Coalition is the most recent round of cuts that came in the 2022 physician fee schedule, and are working with Congressman Bill Arrakis's office to try to stop those cuts. And so that'd be great, you know, a great news. We hope to have a bill filed this month. And we've got some folks that I think on the Democratic side, hopefully will be interested in co-sponsoring that. So stay tuned there.
And that's actually exciting news too, Jason, because the congressman, chairman, is going to be in attendance at the annual meeting this year, correct?
He is, yeah. And you're right. That's a great point. So as it relates to, just real quick, some of the, you know, the other, you know, the state of play from Congress, the fact that, you know, Bill Arrakis now is in the majority is helpful to us. I think there's a, you know, there is a bipartisan concern about, you know, about health system consolidation and what the effects are there. I think though that the Republicans seem to better understand, for whatever reason, that there's a link potentially between these ongoing cuts to the office-based folks and that are driving them out of business. We also, interestingly, folks might be interested to know, we have a call with the MedPAC chair, Dr. Chernow, a week from this Friday to talk to him about some of these issues as well. So, you know, stay tuned on all of that. The other dynamic that's in play, I think, that's important for folks to understand is, you know, the medical device groups, you know, MIDA, MDMA, AdvaMed are all, you know, have weighed in at the end of last year on these cuts. And, you know, we're hearing, and we hope to hear more, that they intend to make these, you know, these ongoing cuts a top level item of interest for them in the new Congress. So stay tuned there as well. On the regulatory front, Dwight mentioned this briefly in the opening. There's kind of three things going on that we're focused on, two where we're kind of, it's more of a wait and see, and one where we're directly engaged. On the wait and see, you know, as folks will recall, on the APM, the radiation therapy alternative payment model, CMS, CMMI put out a rule in August of last year, effectively pushing the model off to a quote to a date to be determined through future rulemaking. So they did say as part of that regulation that they would plan to propose a new start date for the model at least 6 months prior to the proposed start date. So in other words, they're saying to stakeholders, look, you know, we're not going to spring this on you and have you implement it the next day, which we're going to try to give you 6 months notice. That feels to me like them basically saying we would put it in a proposed rule, so which typically come out over the summer and you know, are effective for the next calendar year. So, you know, what that feels to me like is, you know, we potentially could see something in the 2024 OPPS rule on this. And so, you know, we'll be ready to comment if that is the case. Similarly, on the direct supervision issue, as Dwight indicated, there's in the 2020 OPPS rule, CMS lowered that supervision requirement for all therapeutic services from direct to general. They did ask stakeholders, you know, what do you think about this for things like radiation oncology? And ACRO, you know, weighed in along with AMA and some others saying, well, for things like radiation oncology, we have some concerns about that, CMS. So we're on that front as well, kind of in a wait and see mode and see if they'll open that up for comment again in this 2024 OPPS. And then finally, CMS is and AMA as well have been thinking for a while now about how do they update the indirect practice expense in the physician fee schedule. The last time that was done was back in 2007, 2008. That's important for folks to be aware of, because last time that happened, your higher end specialties like radiation oncology got a 5% cut, interventional radiology got a 10% cut when that data was incorporated. There's an interest from stakeholders, ACRO and others, to potentially get together and work on a sort of a unified, response and weigh in both with AMA and CMS on this issue and make sure that some of the errors from the previous survey don't happen again, like, you know, the exclusion of the radiation treatment vault as a direct cost, and some of the other concerning things that we saw. So stay tuned there as well.
So Jason, from the perspective of, you know, one of our members listening to this podcast on the regulatory side, what can they do? Is there anything they can do or should do to address any number of these? What would you say to them? Because we're educating them on this, but what would you say? What could they do that's effective to influence any number of these three items under the regulation?
So on the regulatory side, you know, typically that's done through through the comment period, and so we will absolutely keep everybody informed when those rules come out over the summer about what's in it, and we'll be soliciting folks' feedback on any of those items of concern. There may be quite a bit to do if CMS, for instance, puts something out on an APM this summer. We will see on the PPIS survey. I don't expect that we would see anything in this rule on that. I think the AMA has a thinking that that would be more of a 2025 rulemaking cycle issue. But I think it's just good that folks be educated about these things now, because they at some point will be on the receiving end of this survey, and it's going to be really important that you know, that those things are filled out correctly, because as we've seen before, you know, if there's bad data in, it's going to be, you know, bad outcomes on the other side.
Okay. So you said PPIS, and we didn't go into detail about it, but what exactly is the PPIS?
So the PPIS is basically what informs, well, let me back up. So as we talked about earlier, the physician fee schedule payment is the conversion factor times the RVUs. Within the RVUs, there are three components. There's the work, the practice expense, and then the malpractice. And then within the practice expense, there are two components. There's the direct and then the indirect. And so the indirect practice expense data is informed by that physician practice information survey. So while direct practice expense is your equipment and supply and clinical labor, your indirect is everything else. It's your, you know, it's your overhead and those kinds of things. So the indirect practice expense is informed by, again, by the physician practice information survey, which at this point is, you know, it's going on 15 years old. You know, it's got to be updated soon.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes that have happened, obviously, just think about it, in the last 15 years. And really where I was going with what can they do is, one, be informed, two, be engaged, and three, you know, start that dialogue with your administrators, your CFOs, your COOs, as this comes down the pipe, because as they get these surveys, we want good, comprehensive data to avoid what happened to us in the mid-2000s. And because that's long lasting, right? And we're still living with some of those major effects from a survey that we think was pretty flawed back at that time.
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Then now we'll turn to Dr. Yaris, who sort of talk to us about the other major area of engagement for us with benefit managers, and we'll talk a little bit about pathways as well. So, Chris.
Thank you, Dwight. I appreciate that introduction. As you know, ACRO has remained engaged for the benefit of our members with ROBMs, Radiation Oncology Benefit Managers. The two primary ones that we've encountered and worked with have been AIM and EviCore. AIM has responded very collegially with us and has worked with us on doing a podcast for our members, which hopefully many of the folks listening to this were able to be a part of. And EviCore has engaged with us as well in terms of trying to figure out ways that we can help ourselves to minimize the burden of prior authorizations and that sort of thing. In particular, one of the issues that EviCore has brought to our attention is some challenge that they have encountered with dermatologic radiotherapy and centers who may not have a radiation oncologist as involved in derm radiotherapy care. And that's something that we're working to ensure, you know, is not regarded as acceptable. And so we are advocating very strongly for the benefit of radiation oncologists. Beyond that, probably the thing that I'm most excited about is our ACRO Pathways Project. The ACRO Pathways Project came out of these discussions with ROBMs. And we're, to be very clear on this, our effort in this is to protect the ability of radiation oncologists of good conscience to provide care that is in the best interest of the patient. And still do so absolutely as a part of that. It has to be very evidence-based care. And so we have come up with four initial pilot groups that are addressing questions of optimal treatment in breast cancer, prostate cancer, head and neck cancer, and patients with limited or oligometastases. I'm really excited that at the annual meeting this year, we're going to be presenting preliminary information about that, sharing just kind of an overview of the Pathways Project and giving folks a glimpse at just exactly what these will look like. And the goal there is really to provide clinicians with an up-to-the-moment, efficient way of accessing information about perhaps in many cases things that they don't deal with every day, but also being able to make sure that the bread and butter of our practices are being performed and treatment delivered in keeping with the most current, most efficient standards. And that includes anywhere from fractionation to treatment planning parameters and so forth. So I think that's really one of the most exciting things that I've been involved in, and something that I think is going to provide ACRO members with very real measurable benefit that will not only help preserve their ability to provide that great care, but also ensure that that care is great because it's in keeping with the most current data available.
Great. Thank you, Chris. This is really exciting news. I think the work that you've led with these ROBMs, and I think more importantly, developing this physician point of care, evidence-based approach is going to provide a great resource and potentially reduce the burden, we hope, of pre-authorization with third-party payers. So great opportunity, great work, and we thank you for that. So with that, as you can see, your Greg has been very active on your behalf in the past, and certainly we've got a full plate this year. And this is just a small sampling. These are the high-level directives and high-level initiatives that we're focused on. I would encourage all of you in the college to remain vigilant, remain engaged. I think one of the things you can do too as well is get to know your local congressman, your senator, get them into your practice, let them understand what you do and communicate a lot of these things that I've talked about. And you clearly know the things that are important to your practice. And again, we want you to reflect that to them, but also reflect that to your GREC, because we can also engage on this. Get involved with our ACRO PAC, which also, again, advocates on your behalf. And so with that, I want to thank you very much. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Chris, for the information you presented. And we look forward to talking to you again on a future podcast.